This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents The Alcohol Experiment, Expanded Edition. A 30-day alcohol-free challenge to interrupt your habits and help you take control. This is the author, Annie Grace. To Turner, Trace, and Dalen, you are why I dream of a better tomorrow. Brian, my favorite person, thank you for creating this life with me. Thank you for trusting me enough to double down on this dream and follow the road wherever it leads. Jesus, your grace, your love, your mercy, your breath in my lungs. Introduction. It's your body. It's your mind. It's your choice. During the alcohol experiment, you'll make a choice to go 30 days without alcohol, just to see how you feel. You'll become a detached reporter, researching the facts, writing down your observations, and possibly drawing new conclusions. This is an exciting experiment, not a punishment. You're not weak-willed for questioning your drinking. There's no judgment or labeling here. You have a unique opportunity to remember how to enjoy life without alcohol. And with this book's unconventional approach, I'm willing to bet you'll enjoy the process. Who is this for? This experiment is for you if you're curious about your relationship with alcohol, and you're thinking about drinking less often or not at all. It's also for you if you're of two minds about alcohol. You want to drink less, but you also feel deprived or upset when you abstain. You drink out of habit or boredom, only to regret it later. You're starting to wonder if alcohol is taking more than it's giving. You're curious about a life without booze, but do not feel like you're an alcoholic. You want to drink less, but life is just too stressful. You have a love-hate relationship with alcohol and find yourself setting limits and then breaking them when happy hour rolls around. You've tried to cut back or stop drinking, possibly many times, using willpower alone and found it ineffective. You fell into drinking more than you ever wanted, without making a conscious decision to do so. You can stop drinking for a few days, but find yourself feeling deprived. You are ready to regain control of your drinking, your life, your health, and your happiness. You're looking forward to feeling great on Saturday night and on Sunday morning. You're ready to be your best self, get in shape, regain your self-esteem, and change your life. Now, this book is not for you if you have a strong physical addiction to alcohol. If you're physically dependent and suffer from serious withdrawal symptoms, such as delirium tremens or hallucinations, when you attempt to stop or cut back, this book may help you with your emotional and psychological addiction by changing your perspective and actually erasing your desire to drink. However, I'm not a doctor, and alcohol withdrawal can be extremely dangerous. You should seek professional medical assistance so your detoxification is medically supervised. Is life better without alcohol? That's up to you to decide. My own experience with this experiment proved that, for me, life was absolutely better when I chose not to drink. However, your experience might be different. It's your body, it's your mind, and it's your choice. I'm simply inviting you to open your mind to the possibility of making a different choice, and then encouraging you to see how it changes things in your daily life. And it's 30 days, it's not forever. Many people ask if they will have to give up drinking forever if they try the experiment. My answer is it's up to them. My only goal is to offer you a shift in your perspective and to show you some of the neuroscience behind why you might be drinking more than you'd like to. You might go back to your regular drinking habits after the 30 days, or you might drink more mindfully and less often, or maybe you'll decide to give it another 30 days just for the heck of it. You might also decide you feel so good that you never want to go back. Whatever you decide, I'd love to hear your experience with this experiment. If you'd like to share your story, please email me at hello@alcoholexperiment.com. Why we drink more than we want to. Since you're listening to this right now, you're probably questioning how much you drink. Maybe you know you drink too much and want to quit. Or maybe you're just curious about what life is like with a bit less alcohol. Maybe you're questioning whether you might be overdoing it a bit. No matter where you are on the spectrum, you're not alone. I've been there, and tens of thousands of people inside the alcohol experiment community have been there too. You're probably wondering why in the world you keep drinking, even though you've made a conscious decision to cut back or even to stop. Why do we do the things we no longer want to do? I wondered the same thing. When I first started drinking, it seemed to be a natural, normal thing to do, and I saw nothing wrong with it. I didn't know all the negative ways alcohol could affect my health. I was a drinker, and I was proud of it. I tried hard to develop a tolerance so I could keep up with my colleagues, and it was fun. It was relaxing. I even had better sex when I was drunk, or so I thought. Eventually, I came to a point in my life when I started to question my drinking. I didn't like waking up with a hangover. I didn't like having to piece together conversations and wondering if I said or did anything embarrassing. I wasn't even enjoying myself anymore. I could drink 2 bottles of wine and not even feel it because I had such a high tolerance. So I made a conscious decision to stop drinking, and I thought that would be it. I just wouldn't drink. Easy peasy. Maybe this sounds familiar. If you've tried to give up or moderate your alcohol consumption in the past and failed, I want you to know first that it's not your fault. There's something going on that you're probably not aware of. And once you understand it, your eyes will be open and you'll be able to undergo this experiment in a meaningful way. It won't just be another failure of willpower. To understand what's going on, we need to explore a concept called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive means the way you think, and dissonance means disagreement. So cognitive dissonance is when there's a disagreement in your thinking. Well, how can that be? You've got one brain, right? Actually, your brain has many parts, and they can come into conflict with each other. But what we're really talking about here is your conscious mind and your subconscious mind. Your conscious mind is everything you're aware of. You're tired of waking up with a headache. You don't like spending your money on alcohol. Maybe your relationship is suffering or your kids don't even know you anymore. Because you're aware of those things, you make a conscious decision to stop or cut back on your drinking. Ah, but there's another powerful part of your mind, your subconscious. That's where you've stored a lifetime of subconscious conditioning and beliefs that by definition you're unaware of. Our subconscious mind controls our emotions and desires. And society's attitudes about alcohol are programmed and fixed in our subconscious minds by the media, our parents, our friends, and our role models. We don't consciously adopt these beliefs. They're imprinted on us. Take, for example, the belief that drinking helps you relax. That's a belief you formed a long time ago after careful observation and experience. You weren't born with this knowledge. But you watched your parents drink after a long day, you've seen movies and TV shows where characters drink to relax, and you've experienced it yourself and found it to be true. So you formed a strong belief that alcohol helps you relax. Here's the thing about subconscious beliefs. They're not always true. We form our belief systems when we're very young, and sometimes we'll carry those beliefs our whole life without ever questioning them. And most of the time, this is fine. The sky is blue, ice is cold. If I fall down, it's gonna hurt. Cognitive dissonance happens when one of our subconscious beliefs disagrees with a conscious desire or decision. If I believe alcohol helps me relax, but I've decided not to drink after work anymore, that's a problem. Part of me desperately wants to drink to unwind after a long day, and another part of me doesn't want to overdo it and wake up with a hangover. And these are two conflicting desires. Cognitive dissonance. To drink or not to drink, that is the question. This is one of the reasons we continue to drink more than we want to, even after we've decided to cut back. This is why willpower doesn't work in the long term. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines willpower as energetic determination. This means it takes energy, conscious thought, and effort. This is especially true when you're trying to stop doing something you believe provides a benefit. We don't have to exert conscious effort and energy not to drink something we believe is bad for us if we see no benefit in it. For example, there's no effort involved in turning down a glass of motor oil. If you believe, even subconsciously, that alcohol provides a benefit, you will be exercising willpower to cut back or avoid drinking. The problem with willpower is that since it's energy, willpower runs out. And if you use your willpower on one thing, like being patient with your kids or paying attention during a boring work event, you'll have less willpower to use when you try and turn down that next drink. This is why I say we need to get out of the willpower game altogether. Until we resolve the inner conflict, we cannot hope to succeed. Let's pretend we're trying to avoid sweets because we're trying to lose weight. Yet someone at the office brings in a big plate of freshly baked cookies and we mindlessly grab one and eat it. Okay, who are we kidding? We eat like 3 cookies. Bam! Dissonance. Your brain doesn't want to eat the cookies because you're on a diet, but you did. And so there's this internal conflict. Our brains immediately try to restore internal harmony in a few ways. First, we can try to change our behavior. Make a vow not to eat another cookie, no matter how good they look. Second, we can justify our behavior and say, oh, it's okay to cheat every once in a while. We all need a little sugar now and then. I deserve it. Third, we can add another behavior to counteract the first one. Well, I ate the cookies, but that's okay. I'll go for a long run after work to burn off all the extra calories. Or fourth, we can delude ourselves by denying or ignoring the conflicting information. Those cookies are probably not all that bad for my diet anyway, and they all seemed pretty small. We delude ourselves all the time when it comes to alcohol or any addictive substance. We ignore the fact that alcohol isn't doing us any favors and that it's actually harming us. We do this as a defense mechanism because we're trying to solve this internal disagreement. Because conflict hurts, and humans are hardwired to avoid it whenever possible. And when you're divided, when you're not whole, it's incredibly painful. And what do we drinkers do to numb pain? Well, we drink, and then we drink more. And sometimes we drink until we black out just to avoid something painful, even if temporarily. The more we drink, the worse we feel, mentally and physically. And the more we don't want to drink. And the more we don't want to drink, the more internal conflict we create. And the more conflict, the more pain. And the more pain, the more we drink. And this is a cycle that spins out of control. It's not intentional. We may not even know we're doing it until something terrible happens. At some point, we wake up to the reality and try to change. But unless we address the dissonance, change continually eludes us. I tried to drink less, I set limits on my drinking, and I could do it for a little while. But eventually, my willpower would give out, and I'd be right back to waking up, wondering how many glasses of wine I'd had the night before. I felt helpless. I felt weak, and I felt alone. I'm smart, I'm capable. Why did this have such a hold on me? I intended to drink a single glass of wine, or maybe 2, but would wake up the next morning being unable to count how many I'd had. And that would make me want to drink more, because then I wouldn't have to think about the fact that I'd broken a commitment to myself again. Drinking erased the conflict, even if just for a little while. What I didn't know was that there was something much bigger at work. The subconscious mind is where our desires originate. So part of me was so much stronger than my conscious desire to get my act together. The deck was actually stacked against me, and I didn't even realize it. The good news is that I discovered a way to truly resolve my cognitive dissonance around drinking. And it works for anything, by the way. If you're eating sugar when you don't want to, or gambling when you don't want to, or watching too much television, whatever, this method works to resolve the conflict and get your conscious and subconscious minds on the same page. And when that happens, you get what you want without all the effort. You can go to a party with all your friends and have a great time without even thinking about alcohol. You can ring in the new year with ginger ale, and you can save your relationships. You can change your life. So do you want to know the secret? It's all about awareness. If you're struggling because you're unaware of your subconscious beliefs, then the solution is to become aware of them. Shine a light deep into the nooks and crannies of your mind and figure out what beliefs are holding you back. What beliefs are in conflict with your desire to drink less or to stop drinking? I've developed a proven, scientifically based process to do exactly that. The process is based on a technique called liminal thinking, created by the best-selling author Dave Gray, and The Work by author Byron Katie. The liminal space is actually the area between your conscious and subconscious or subliminal mind. The technique I've developed is called ACT. That stands for Awareness, Clarity, and Turnaround. You're going to become aware of your belief by naming it and putting language to it, and next you clarify the belief, where it came from, and how it feels inside of you. And finally, you'll turn around the belief, coming up with a few reasons why the opposite of your long-held belief may be truer or as true as the original belief. As with many of the most profound tools for change, it is a simple process, deconstructing your beliefs by asking yourself questions like these. What do I believe? Is it true? How does it make me feel? Is it helpful? Remember when I said that sometimes our beliefs just aren't true? Well, that's how you are going to untangle this mess, by discovering the truth. Does alcohol truly relax you, or do you just think it does? Do you really enjoy sex more when you're drunk, or does it become a sloppy, embarrassing mess you can barely remember? I'm not going to suggest the answer is one or the other. I can't make you believe something you don't want to believe. Your subconscious beliefs remain deeply entrenched until you become aware of them and decide to change them by questioning their validity. Now, every few days during this 30-day experiment, you'll see a bonus ACT chapter. You can listen to them as they come up, or you can listen to them first if you like. These special chapters present you with some facts regarding certain common beliefs around alcohol. All I ask is for you to keep an open mind and carefully consider what you're reading. It might take a few days or weeks of mulling it over before you decide one way or the other. You might need to test out some theories, and that's okay. Take as much time as you need. This is your experiment. Now, here's a preview of how the ACT technique works. The ACT technique. Step 1, awareness. Name your belief. In the context of alcohol, this is your conscious reason for drinking, simply put into words. For example, alcohol relaxes me. Step 2, clarity. Discover why you believe this and where it originated. You do this by asking questions, both of yourself and of the external evidence or things around you, and uncovering truths about your belief. For example, what have I observed that supports this belief? Happy hour, and the idea that everyone unwinds with a cocktail after a stressful day of work. Or every time I talk to my friends about my struggles, either with my kids or my husband, they always say something like, oh no, don't worry, I know just the thing. You just need some wine ASAP. You can ask, what are my experiences with alcohol and relaxation? You might respond that you felt the relaxing effects of alcohol. After a stressful day of work, a drink does seem to calm your nerves and allow you to transition from a hard day working to a relaxing evening. But then it's time to do some detective work and compare this belief with both your internal and external realities. Internally, you're going to ask yourself questions like these. Well, what exactly do I mean by relax? And how do I feel when I'm not relaxed? And how exactly do I feel when I am relaxed? And does anything else make me feel the same way? And how do I feel when I'm drinking? Is that actually the same feeling as relaxed? And how do I feel the next day? Is that relaxed? And then we'll ask, is it true scientifically? Does alcohol relax human beings? And that's when we externally examine the evidence. Does research support this belief? What do external sources say about this belief? Do they support it or contradict it? And don't worry, you won't have to do a bunch of research. Throughout the 30 days of the experiment, I'll be supplying the studies and the data. And finally, in the clarity step, you'll want to reflect on two questions. How does this belief make me feel? How does it make me behave? This check-in with you about what the belief is doing in your life can often provide the most clarity and motivation for change. Step 3 is turnaround. This is where you allow your subconscious to let go of the belief, deciding if after exploration, it's indeed true for you. And there are two steps here. First, you turn the initial belief around and find as many ways as you can think of that the opposite of your initial belief is true. For example, if your belief is alcohol relaxes me, the opposite becomes alcohol does not relax me or alcohol stresses me out. Now that you've stated the opposite, come up with as many reasons as you can that the opposite is as true or truer than the original belief. Examples might include, alcohol actually stresses my body out, and a hangover is sure evidence of that. Or alcohol prevents me from taking the action necessary to truly relieve my stress. So in that case, it does not relax me. Or when I drink, I'm more likely to get in an argument with my spouse, and of course fighting is stressful. Or when I drink, I beat myself up about it the next day, and that is very stressful. And once you've done that, the final step is to simply decide if this belief still holds true for you, and if it's serving you, or if you would be better off letting it go. ACT. Awareness, clarity, turnaround. It's an effective, scientific way to shine a light into your subconscious and figure out what's actually causing your behavior. Now, at the end of this audiobook, I'll actually guide you through the process so that you can apply this to any belief that comes up about alcohol or anything else in your life. The important thing is to remember that there's no wrong answer. You're not messing up if you go through this process and still feel the belief is true for you. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but trust me on this. This process is about presenting your subconscious mind with information, facts, and logic. It's about shifting your mindset. And while that can often happen quickly, simply by reading through the ACT technique chapters, it can also happen more slowly over time. And again, there are no wrong answers. Now that you know there's something deeper at work here, and there's something you can do about it, I hope you're excited about this experiment. My ACT technique works, and you can use it to enact change in so many areas of your life. It's so empowering. You can use it to lose weight, start exercising, stop procrastinating, even to be a better parent. But for now, let's refocus on your drinking. Sticking with it. Often we don't think about how much we drink or why we drink like we're doing in this experiment until drinking is no longer an option for us. We don't know if we drink because there's chaos in our lives or if there's chaos in our lives because we drink. Suddenly, when the option to escape through drinking isn't there, we're actually forced to take a look at what's going on in our lives and what might be triggering us. What are we trying to distract ourselves from? Sometimes the answer is obvious. Work is stressful. The boss yelled again. But other times, there doesn't seem to be an obvious trigger. Sometimes we drink to avoid anything unpleasant or stressful, and this experiment offers us the option to switch from seeing stress as the reason to drink to seeing it as an opportunity to be creative and find other ways to deal with our problems. Maybe addressing the source of the stress is a good idea. Maybe blowing off steam at the driving range or at a boxing gym would be equally satisfying, and you could get a healthy workout in as a bonus. As adults, we develop all sorts of coping mechanisms to handle stress. Maybe you like to read or meditate or knit or watch TV or exercise. When I was living in New York, I used to go for a long run at the end of every day. Then, when I was encouraged to attend all sorts of boozy work events from happy hours to network meetings, that healthy habit got replaced by alcohol. And over time, all my healthy coping mechanisms were replaced with alcohol, and my life was thrown completely out of balance. What I've learned is that when we're tired, stressed out, cranky, or upset, we actually don't need alcohol. What we need is to change our emotional state. We need to do something to go from tired to energized, from cranky to happy, and we turn to alcohol. You're going to experience stress over the next 30 days. I can pretty much guarantee it. But rather than saying screw it and giving up, just stop and think it through. If you have a drink now, how will that make you feel later? It might make you feel better temporarily, but you'll probably feel even worse the next morning when you realize you broke your promise to yourself. But here's the thing. Every day that you listen to a chapter, you're learning, and I so strongly encourage you to pick up right where you left off and just keep going. If you make it 30 days with just a few drinks, that's a huge improvement, and you will have learned so much. This experiment is about getting through all the information and staying curious about your behavior, whatever it is. I recommend keeping a journal, You can even jot down your thoughts in the Notes app of your phone or a video diary to record your thoughts each day. Notice how your body feels physically and emotionally. You might be surprised by the changes you see from day to day. I'm not here to tell you to stop drinking or to keep drinking. I'm simply here to provide you with a framework to discover your truth through logical reasoning based on scientific information. At the end of the day, you are the only one who can make this choice. My only goal is to challenge some of the beliefs that may have been holding you back. It's a terrible feeling to want something new or different and feeling like you're stuck, unable to move toward it in any meaningful way. One way or another, you'll be able to make a move by the end of this experiment. Your job is simple. Observe and become aware for 30 alcohol-free days. Be a reporter, just the facts, ma'am. Now, if you're used to beating yourself up over your drinking, give yourself a break during this experiment. And if you slip up, give yourself a break then too. The goal is not to be perfect. The goal is simply to test out a new way of thinking and behaving and see how it feels. To see if it moves you closer to the desire you have for a new life. In fact, imperfection can be a wonderful tool to help you see yourself even more clearly. What I ask of you now and for the next 30 days is to just keep an open mind. Consider the possibilities presented each day. Is it possible that you could have all the facts wrong? For example, could anxiety actually be a heavy influence on your drinking? Or is it possible that there's much more going on with the marketing and the profit engine of alcohol and its industry than you currently realize? Is there something going on within the brain that makes alcohol seem more attractive than it truly is? Again, all I ask is that you keep an open mind. At the end, you might decide to keep drinking, and maybe you'll naturally cut down on the amount you drink. Or you might decide to stop altogether because you just feel so good. Again, it's your body, it's your mind, and it's absolutely your choice. Here are a few tips before you start. One of the most interesting things I've found in my years of research is just how many people want to change their drinking. I really thought I was alone. I thought I was the only one who was questioning my drinking habits, but nothing could be further from the truth. It's not that we're alone in our society, it's that questioning our relationship with alcohol is taboo, even among our closest friends. An honest conversation around drinking just invites judgment, yet the statistics are staggering. 80%+ of Americans drink alcohol, and a huge majority drink it regularly. And think about this. Out of the people you know who drink alcohol regularly, how many of them have said something like, "Oh, I overdid it last night," or "After last night, I am never drinking again"? Everybody says that at one time or another. Almost everybody I know, and certainly everybody I drank with, has told me that they wanted to change their drinking to some degree at some point. So you're not alone in wondering about this topic. You are actually in the vast majority. Another thing I've realized after reaching hundreds of thousands of people with this message is that drinking more than you want is not a weakness. If you've tried to stop your drinking in the past and failed, I want you to know that it's not your fault. Some of the smartest and most successful people in the world drink more than they want to, including doctors, lawyers, corporate executives, psychiatrists, professors, you name it. And when they try to cut back, they don't find it easy. And when it's not easy, we blame ourselves, believing that there's something wrong with us. As you will discover, there is nothing wrong with you. It's simply that you're a human being who is drinking a substance that is addictive to human beings. So why is this happening to even the smartest and the best of us? It's because we're going about it all wrong. The entire conversation around alcohol is flawed. And by the time you finish this book and the 30-day experiment, you'll see that it's not black and white. You're not either a normal drinker or an alcoholic. In fact, most of us fall somewhere in the middle, in the gray area. So relax and let go of your anxieties. There are no judgments here. And even though I've decided to stop drinking indefinitely, you might make a different decision after doing this experiment. My only goal is to give you as much truthful information as I can so that you can make the right decision for you. An informed decision. what to expect over the next 30 days. Magic happens in 30 days. It's a period of time when the brain can actually change by making new neural connections, to build great new habits or to eliminate habits that have held you back. But to experience the magic, you have to deal with a few side effects. After all, alcohol is actually a toxin and your body needs to cleanse itself. So you might experience some cravings and irritability at first, and this is completely normal and it will pass as the alcohol leaves your system. It takes about a week for the body to detoxify itself, so be gentle with yourself during this period. And once your system is clean, you're going to feel amazing. You'll have more energy, your brain will feel like a fog has been lifted, and it's possible that you'll feel happier than you have in a long time. So here are a few things that you can do to help that process along. First, make a firm decision to commit to this experiment 100%. One firm decision takes all the stress out of the thousands of smaller decisions you have to make every day. You want to burn the boats here like there's no going back. It's only 30 days, and in the end, you get to make the final decision about whether to continue alcohol-free or not. It would also be great if you could tell somebody you trust about what you're doing and why. It's okay if you don't want to announce it to the world quite yet, but there's incredible power in having someone you can confide in. If you do this, you're much more likely to follow through with the whole 30 days. You need to drink plenty of water to flush out all the toxins in your system. The more you drink clean, pure water, the faster your body can cleanse itself. It's important to get lots of sleep. Your body repairs itself when you're asleep, so give it all the time it needs. If you're worried you won't be able to sleep without drinking, we're going to cover that later in this book. And you'll want to get some exercise. You'll feel better when you get your blood moving. I found vigorous exercise can be a great way to overcome both cravings and irritability. And of course, eat healthy foods, especially protein. Your body needs protein to make amino acids, which help elevate your mood. I would encourage you to start a journal. You're going to want to talk through what you learn in this book, and a journal is a great place to record your thoughts privately. Again, you can use an app on your phone or make a video diary or just use good old-fashioned pen and paper. And if you sign up at thealcoholexperiment.com, you'll get a private daily digital journal. It's a great way to keep track of your amazing progress. You'll probably want to take a photo and weigh yourself, and you might be surprised at the differences you'll see in your physical appearance after 30 days without alcohol. And you should definitely stay social. Now is not the time to isolate yourself or lock yourself away from your friends and your family. You need your social life. You need your friends. You might be nervous about going out to places where you regularly drink, but this is an experiment, so you have to get out there and try it. You're experimenting with how you feel in real life without alcohol. And as you go along, you will be amazed to realize that you don't need alcohol to socialize or to have a good time. You only thought you did. Think back to when you were a child or in high school. Did you need alcohol then? And weren't you having some of the most fun? And what's the worst that can happen? You go out for happy hour, you order a great glass of iced tea, and you have a miserable time. So what? It's just one evening, and it's all part of the experiment, and that's great data. You can examine exactly why you had a miserable time and whether the lack of alcohol is truly the reason. I bet you'll surprise yourself by actually having an amazing time. I want to encourage you to be positive. Many people tell me their biggest fear is that they don't think they can do it. They aren't sure they're strong enough to actually make it 30 days. Don't kick off this experiment feeling sorry for yourself. You have so much to look forward to. Sure, the cleansing process takes a little while and it's not entirely pleasant, but you're strong. You can handle this. The same people who thought they couldn't do it write to me after a week or two and they say they can't believe the difference in themselves. They now know they're stronger than they thought. And I'd like to invite you to join this book's online social challenge at alcoholexperiment.com. There you can do this experiment with tens of thousands of like-minded people from all over the globe. You'll get amazing community support, plus daily video resources and a private online journal to document your progress. Consider posting your selfie and getting encouragement from others. Use it as a reminder and as a way to track your progress. One of the most amazing changes is how much clearer, more peaceful, and alert your eyes will look after 30 days alcohol-free. And when you join the free online experiment, there are even alcohol experiment mentors who have already gone through this process and are committed to helping you make it to the end. And since you have this book, I'd like to offer you a reader's discount so you can visit alcoholexperiment.com/reader. Now, throughout this book, you'll find stories and observations from actual community members. The comments are real. The names have been changed to protect privacy, but they're so incredibly encouraging. Community is key. Consider hosting the alcohol experiment in your community. Change is more fun with friends. I've put together some ideas for how to make this super fun in a group, and you can find all the details near the end of this audiobook. This is a 30-day experiment, so I just want you to listen to the short lesson for each day. Try to listen in the morning if you can, and put the recommendations into practice throughout the day. Don't be surprised if you find yourself having epiphanies in the shower or shouting, "Holy cow," when you're driving. Once your mind starts mulling over some of these ideas, there's no telling where your thoughts can go. As with almost everything in life, your perspective can determine your outcome. So instead of thinking about giving something up, think about everything you're going to gain. Self-respect, more money in your pocket, a better relationship with your spouse and your kids, better health, better working relationships, a leaner body, and so much more. This is so exciting. You're embarking on an amazing journey, and don't worry, it's only 30 days. You can do anything for 30 days. Are you ready? All right, let's go. Journal questions. Your daily wisdom direct from you. I'm so excited to include journal questions for you at the end of each day. Here's why. Besides the fact that my own personal experience of journaling has been one of the most helpful and profound tools in my life, journaling has also been scientifically proven to reduce stress, boost immunity, sharpen memory, improve mood, and increase emotional awareness and function. All of these benefits will be so helpful to you as you navigate this journey. And I especially love the last one, increased emotional awareness and function, for our purpose here. As you begin to experience life without alcohol, there will be so much more rebalancing on a cellular, hormonal level in your brain and body, and on an emotional level. Becoming more aware of your emotional landscape and increasing your natural ability to regulate emotions with the help of journaling throughout this process will be so beneficial, both in the short and the long term. Yet science aside, I believe the most important and profound benefit of honest journaling is that you access the deep wells of wisdom that already exist inside you. Have you ever had an aha moment when something just falls into place and the insight feels familiar? Like it was something you've known all along, but you just needed to remember? I believe that journaling gives us that. And I've created these daily questions, not only for the scientific and neurological benefits, but to allow you to learn from your most important teacher throughout these 30 days. That's you. You may feel some resistance in regards to journaling. I know I did. For a long time, I didn't write just for myself, but as if someone was going to find it later, even if that someone was just me. Yes, I filtered my own writing even for myself, and I'm not the only one. We often miss out on some core benefits of journaling because we won't let down the barriers or self-judgment as the words come out on the page. In order to cross the threshold of resistance that you may feel in regards to journaling, here are some tips that have helped me a ton. Become aware of your filters and remove them. Most people write and live with filters. Some of these filters may include writing what we think we should write, writing with a specific purpose in mind, trying to write beautifully or trying to write correctly or trying to sound smart, etc. This is one of the biggest hindrances to journaling. And right here, right now, I'm inviting you to toss those filters out the window. Write like no one is reading. Seriously, though, not even yourself at a later date. When I got that I wasn't writing for anyone else to read, not even myself, it shifted everything for me. Plan to burn everything you write. Now, you don't actually have to, but write it like you plan to. When I did this, my ability to write what I was actually feeling and all of its human ugliness and imperfection increased greatly. And thus, the positive effects of journaling increased as well. I started to be able to truly just empty my brain of everything rather than holding back. Now, I don't want you to underestimate this profound tool, the tool of writing, because of its simplicity. And be gentle with yourself with the discipline of it. Don't beat yourself up for missing a day or even a week. Just jump back in wherever you can, whenever you want or need to, especially when you're having a hard time. And finally, allow yourself to marvel and celebrate the incredible insights and wisdom that only you can bring to this 30-day experiment. Remembering that none of my words will be half as important in your life as the words you write to yourself. Now, I know this is an audiobook, so I want you to get a separate journal and make this commitment to yourself to actually put pen to paper and write. The impact will be profound. Day one. What's your why? This is a quote by Bob Moad. He says, "The best day of your life is the one on which you decide your life is your own. No apologies or excuses. No one to blame. The gift is yours. It is an amazing journey, and you alone are responsible for the quality of it. This is the day your life really begins." We've talked about how you've been unconsciously conditioned to believe alcohol is a vital part of life for relaxing, socializing, and everything in between. And you know there are competing desires inside your mind. Your conscious mind wants to drink less or even stop drinking completely. And your subconscious mind believes you need to keep drinking for some very good reasons. Before we dive into those beliefs and stories and decide if they're true, we need to know what those beliefs actually are. After reading literally thousands of stories from people who have gone through this process, I'm pretty sure I know what your beliefs are. But that's not important, because what's important is that you know what they are. So let's start this experiment by writing a list. Why do you drink? I want you to write down a list of every reason you drink. And there's no judgment here. We simply want a list. To get you going, here's a look at part of my list, and you might have some of the same reasons. I drank because work is stressful and drinking helped me relax after a long day. I thought that drinking really helped me to be more creative at work on the job. I believe that drinking really helped me to be more outgoing at networking events. I thought that drinking was vital to my social relationships and my social life in general. And I was 100% convinced that I absolutely loved the taste of wine. Now, don't stop with a few reasons. Keep going until you can't think of any more. You might come up with 50 or 100 reasons, and that's fine. You've brought your subconscious beliefs up to the surface of your mind. So now we can shine a light on them, examine them, and you can decide for yourself whether those beliefs are true. And you can make that decision based on the facts, not social conditioning from the media or your peers. Now, I don't want you to do anything with this list right now. Don't try to change your own mind. At the moment, these are your beliefs, and they're currently true in your life. Now, as I present you different ideas over the next 30 days, you might start to think about this list differently. So why the alcohol experiment? Next, I want you to pull out another piece of paper and make a second list. Write down all the reasons you want to take part in this experiment. Why do you think you might want to drink less? Here's a peek at my list. I'm tired of waking up slightly hungover or very hungover. I no longer want to worry that I said something stupid the night before. And I'm just sick of the internal dialogue about my drinking. I'm literally tired of thinking about drinking. And I saw a photo of myself out with friends, and my teeth looked purplish from the wine. It was disgusting. I look back on certain days, and my memories are so fuzzy. I'm afraid that I'm missing my life because I can't clearly remember it all. So today is simple. Just read over both your lists and notice how they're in conflict with each other. This is the whole source of your cognitive dissonance. It's the battle going on in your mind all the time, now written down in your own words. And over the coming weeks, it might help you to picture these lists on either side of a seesaw or a balance. Right now, the first list might be a lot longer than the second. But in a few weeks, check back to see if that balance has shifted at all. Day one journal questions. Remember, all the wisdom you seek is actually inside you. The most important words in this experiment are the ones you tell yourself. Take some time and answer these questions in a separate journal which is most effective, or even make a voice memo to yourself, or by simply speaking the answers out loud for only you to hear. 1. Why you drink, your big list. Reflect and read over each reason you wrote down. How do they make you feel? What reasons do you wish weren't there? If you could take an eraser to your brain and change some of these reasons and thoughts, would you? 2. What's your why? Now, why do you want to take part in the alcohol experiment? Why do you want to take a break? Why do you want to drink a bit less in the future? Remember some of my list and make your own. Dig deep on why you're doing this in the first place. 3. Let's get excited. Allow yourself to dream. If this experiment delivered everything it promises, what would that look like in your life? How would you feel at the end of 30 days? What about a year from now? What would have changed in your life? Don't focus on the pain of what you don't have yet, but allow yourself to feel the hope and focus on the joy of what is yet to come. Remember when I said community was so important? Sometimes we have to hear other people's stories in order to have our own belief that we can and should do something. So every day, I'm going to read you some reflections from thealcoholexperiment.com. Day 1 reflections from alcoholexperiment.com. I am sick of alcohol damaging my life in so many ways, including making an idiot of myself, hangovers, feeling violently ill, wasted time and opportunity, horrendous fights with my husband, putting a strain on my marriage, weight gain, no exercise, loosened stomach, way too big of an appetite, anxiety, smoking, money, and no time. That's from Juliana. Brian said, "Today is the first day of the rest of my life." Romero says, "Hey guys, day 1 here. I'm interested to see if my list of reasons why I drink was smaller than my list of reasons why I'm here. I'm taking that as a sign that I have more reason to stop than to continue drinking. I have more to gain from being alcohol-free, and I feel really motivated by that." Liza says, "I decided that my life is my own and I'm ready to live it the way I want to. And for me, that doesn't include alcohol." Before we get to day 2, we're going to do our first act. Act 1, the taste of alcohol. The idea of the ACT technique, Awareness Clarity Turnaround, is to give you an alternate perspective. It's an exercise to help you resolve your internal disagreement around alcohol. First, we'll become aware by naming a belief you have around drinking. Then we'll gain clarity around that belief, looking at where it came from and how you may have picked it up without even knowing it. We'll also look at the internal and external evidence that supports that belief or doesn't. And finally, we'll decide if the belief holds true through a turnaround. We'll look at the opposite of the belief and decide if the opposite is as true or truer than the original belief. When this process is complete, you get to decide if you still believe this, and more important, if that belief is serving you or if your life would be better by simply letting it go. And no matter what you decide, you'll gain a new perspective. The whole idea is to play detective and look at the evidence and form an objective opinion. The taste of alcohol. What's your all-time favorite drink? The one you can't wait to get your hands on at the end of a long day or on a Friday night? I bet if you think about it hard enough, you can even taste it right now. Taste is such an innocent reason for drinking. After all, no one thinks twice about eating ice cream or nachos. They taste good. And our favorite alcoholic beverages are the same way. But for the sake of this experiment, let's dig a little bit deeper. First, awareness. Many people tell me they really like the taste of their favorite drink, and I get it. I was a red wine girl all the way. And maybe you're a margarita lover, or maybe you enjoy the taste of a good scotch on the rocks. So let's name this belief. I drink for the taste. I know a woman who drinks a shot of Bailey's in her coffee every morning before she drives her kids to school. And she doesn't think it's a big deal. It's just a shot, and nothing else makes her coffee taste as good. Her concerned husband tried to get her to try Bailey's flavored coffee creamer, but she insists it just doesn't taste the same. But if you think about it, she's not actually tasting a lot of the alcohol. It's mostly the flavorings and the cream and the sugar. So what do you think? Is she truly just enjoying Bailey's only for the taste? Or maybe there's something else going on? Clarity. In order to gain clarity around your beliefs, you need to look back at the past and figure out why you have this belief in the first place. Where did it come from? There are no right or wrong answers here, and everyone is different. So ask yourself, what observations and experiences have you had in the past that might make you believe that alcohol tastes good? Maybe it's something as simple as watching your parents pour themselves a drink at the end of a day, or observing how they drink glass after glass in the evening. Why in the world would they drink all the time if it tasted so bad? I mean, they're smart, right? They're grown-ups, so it must taste good, otherwise they wouldn't keep drinking it. I have a friend from France whose parents made sure she drank a little wine with dinner from the time she was 8 years old. She actually hated how it tastes, and she told her parents so frequently, but they continued to press on, saying she would appreciate the taste when she got older. The implication was that when she became more mature and more grown up, she would enjoy the taste of wine. And we all want to appear more grown up when we're kids, don't we? And sure enough, over time, my friend became a great wine lover and now drinks it every night. I want you to think back to your first drink and remember the experience. What were you drinking? Maybe it was wine at dinner when you were young. Maybe it was champagne on New Year's Eve when you were allowed to stay up until midnight for the first time. Or maybe you snuck into your parents' liquor cabinet with a friend on a dare. Or maybe it wasn't until much later. Maybe your first beer was in college. Regardless of when it was, think back to your first sip. Did you actually like it, or did you choke and sputter and maybe even spit it out? Who was with you at the time? Was it a friend you wanted to impress? Was it a parent you wanted to make feel proud? Were you trying to find a place to fit in with a new group of people? If you're like the vast majority of people I talk to, your first experience tasting alcohol wasn't pleasant. You didn't actually like it. But there was certainly someone there to say, don't worry, it's an acquired taste. You'll get used to it. So take a few minutes to think about or even write down where your taste for alcohol came from. Was it like the first time you tried a new beer or hard liquor? Was it always an amazing taste that you immediately loved? Or did you have to acquire the taste over time? Or did you have to fake liking it just because you wanted to impress someone? Now that you have an idea where your beliefs come from, let's play detective, and let's look at the internal and the external evidence. This evidence will help you decide whether your belief that you like the taste of alcohol is true, or whether you've just been fooling yourself. People actually have some pretty intense reactions when they taste alcohol for the first time. They talk about it burning on the way down. They wrinkle up their nose because it doesn't even smell good. Their eyes start watering. They might even spit it out. Why? One of the major reasons we don't like the taste of something is because it's harmful to us. We don't like the taste of rotten food because it can make us sick. Well, what's going on when you have a hangover? You're sick. Your taste buds react negatively to alcohol to protect you from a harmful substance. Let's think about the idea of acquiring a taste for something. Whatever your drink of choice is, you probably didn't like it immediately, but you allowed your body to get used to it. Why? Because your brain assumes that you have no choice in the matter. If you did, it would make no sense for you to keep drinking. So your body does the logical thing. It makes it easier for you to deal with the taste. You acquire it. Which, if you think about it, is the same thing as becoming immune to the taste of alcohol. Let's look at it in another way. My brother has a goat farm, and whenever I walk into the barn, there's an intense, unpleasant odor. As my sister-in-law says, it smells very goaty. But guess what? My brother and his family don't even notice the smell anymore because they've gotten used to it. They have to go into the barn and feed the goats, so their brains no longer register the odor. This doesn't mean they like it, but they have, over time, gotten used to it. If you did happen to love the taste of your first drink, it was probably something fruity or creamy that was more sugar than anything else, am I right? Some drinks go down more easily than others, and straight alcohol is actually ethanol. That's the same stuff you put in your gas tank. A few sips will actually make you vomit, and a few ounces of pure ethanol will kill you. I think it's pretty safe to say that you would never go suck on the end of a gas pump nozzle because it tastes good. No matter what your favorite drink is, the alcohol makes up only a small percentage of liquid. The rest is flavoring, sugar, carbohydrates, and other additives. Now, of course, there are things we appreciate as an adult that we did not appreciate as children. Clearly, we grow a more refined palate as we age, but let's not kid ourselves. If we were purely drinking for the taste, we could certainly find other substitutes that are similar and wouldn't cause any of the side effects that alcohol causes. I'm unfortunately a bit intolerant to gluten, but I've managed to find plenty of substitutes that aren't exactly the same, but are now a natural part of my life, and just don't create the stomach pain that gluten does for me. The fact is, ethanol doesn't taste good. Consider this. When scientists want rats or mice to drink alcohol for a study, they have to force feed them because they will not naturally opt to drink it. So are you honestly drinking it just for the taste? And if not, then why are you drinking it? You've almost certainly observed characters in the movie and on TV enjoying the taste of alcohol, or giving a satisfying burp and a smile after chugging a beer. Even if the actors were actually drinking whiskey-colored tea, the message still gets across. It tastes good. And we all tend to choose alcohol to match our perceived identities or our self-identity. If we believe ourselves to be refined and classy, maybe we drink red wine. Or if we like old cowboy movies, maybe we lean towards whiskey. Of course, if you're an international spy, you've got to order a martini, shaken, not stirred. We identify with the characters and tend to like the same drinks they like. I used to love chugging Guinness and was so proud of my chugging ability. It made me feel tough and like one of the boys in a very masculine work environment. Maybe you see yourself as a discerning wine lover and your cellar has become a status symbol. If that's the case, you probably pride yourself on your ability to discern the toasty, smoky, oaky flavors with their fruity or floral overtones, or whatever. But here's a fun fact. The American Association of Wine Economists conducted a study of more than 6,000 wine drinkers. And in this blind taste test, they discovered that people cannot tell the difference between cheap and expensive wines. In fact, most people preferred the taste of the cheaper varieties. And you know what else? The same blind research later found that people can't tell the difference between pâté and dog food. But what about the argument alcohol enhances the taste of my food? Do we say that about any other beverage and food combination? People do say milk enhances the taste of cookies, but could that be because we physically dip the cookies into milk? I mean, nobody dips their steak into their wine glass. And the truth is that alcohol is actually an anesthetic. It numbs our ability to taste, making it more difficult to savor our food. Imagine for a minute that we could remove all the physical and the emotional effects of alcohol. If it couldn't actually make you tipsy or drunk, would people still drink it? There's a pretty convincing body of research suggesting that we wouldn't. It tastes bad, it's poisonous. Drinking for the taste is a convenient and an innocent excuse. At the end of the day, is it a possibility that there's something more going on with your drinking than just the taste? We humans were incredibly adept to lying to ourselves and believing our own stories. Now, it's possible that you do actually love the taste of a cool frosty margarita. But is it really the alcohol you like? You might not have tried a delicious virgin margarita, but the truth is they taste just as good and maybe even better. And you'll be surprised and empowered by how much you enjoy yourself without the tequila or the hangover. Now for the turnaround. This may be the most important part of the ACT technique. Here you want to dig into the turnaround or the opposite of the belief. You want to take the time to come up with as many ways as you can, at least three, that the turnaround is as true or truer than the original belief. In this case, the opposite of I drink for the taste is I don't drink for the taste, or I don't like the taste. Now it's your turn to come up with as many ways as you can that that turnaround is true in your life. Day 2. It's not what you give up, but what you gain. Rick Godwin said, "One reason people resist change is because they focus on what they have to give up instead of what they have to gain." As a participant in this experiment, you're obviously giving something up. you're giving up alcohol for 30 days. But there are two ways to look at it. You could focus on how hard it's going to be and all the things you're going to have to give up and go without. Or you could think about all the amazing insights and experiences you're going to gain as a result of this experiment. We all undoubtedly control our destinies through our expectations. In other words, we get what we expect. If we expect this experiment to be miserable, then that's what we're going to get. And so to make this a more pleasant experience, we have to change our thinking. We have to expect to go into this and experience 30 days of amazing epiphanies, better health, higher energy levels, and a systematic shift in our thinking. How do we do it? We decide to focus on the positive. It's really that simple. You might feel weird at first focusing on all the good things that are going to happen, especially if you're skeptical that they will happen. But when you shift your thinking to what you will gain, good things will come. They truly will. Here are some benefits. For me, I lost 13 pounds in the first 30 days. My marriage has never been better, and I finally started doing all the things I wanted to do for years and years. Things alcohol kept me from doing, such as starting a business, writing a book, creating a mindfulness practice, and building a really strong family life. I've become much happier socially because I'm never worried about what I said the night before, and I've become so much more successful. I think I look significantly better. My eyes are clearer, my hair is thicker. But these are my stories. What about other people who have gone through the 30-day experiment? What have they gained? Here's a short list from other alcohol experiment participants. Clear-headed mornings, better health, less anxiety, true relaxation, better relationships, self-love, happier family life, freedom to fully participate in life. I also want you to pay attention to your language. So how exactly do you focus on the positive? The easiest way to do it is to pay attention to your language, the words coming out of your mouth. Saying something like, I can't drink, it's pretty negative, and it sends all the wrong messages to your subconscious because it leaves you feeling deprived and thinking about something you can't do. On the other hand, saying, I'm going to enjoy drinking an iced tea tonight, or I really love this lemonade, is saying the same thing in a different way. You're telling yourself you're not going to drink alcohol, but you're doing it in a positive way. And you're giving your subconscious the message that you're going to enjoy what you're going to do, instead of that you're deprived or that you can't. Saying, I'm giving up alcohol for the month, also sends a negative message to your subconscious. But saying, I'm experimenting to see how much better I feel, is totally different. Positive phrasing sends all the right messages and will help you be more successful. So start to be mindful and conscious of how you talk to yourself. You don't have to do this experiment. You get to do it. You have the opportunity to do this. You're excited to do this, and you are choosing to participate. Recognize your old disempowering words around alcohol and replace them with new empowering words. This is so important. The brain loves anything that gets you out of pain and into pleasure. It loves that shift both consciously and subconsciously. So choose the words you want to use. When you start consciously choosing your words, you'll even start to get a little buzz, especially if you reinforce statements right afterward. If you say, I'm going to enjoy some iced tea tonight, reinforce it by actually feeling it. Wow, I did enjoy that iced tea tonight. The brain will latch on.